available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome back, everybody, to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site of the Scout.com network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the Scout.com network. And we are the Podcast of Champions. The 2015 football season, officially over. But of course,
2000 season is also over, right? Both of them are over.
But recruiting season, Dave, heating up, three big weekends before signing day, February 3rd. And we wanted to bring in the foremost expert on the West Coast, talking recruiting, Greg Biggins. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Biggins. He's been a great member of the Scout.com team. We want to get a lot of insights from him on all 12 Pac-12 teams, where they're ranked and how the recruiting's going. Before we jump into that, just want to let you know our contact information. If you want to have a question for, if you have a question for us, recruiting team, otherwise, email us, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. On the Twitter and the Twitter sphere, you can tweet us at Pac-12podcast. Our website, where we put up all the episodes, Pac-12podcast.com. And of course, we want to hear the voicemails, man. Leave a voicemail for us, 641-715-3900, extension 734-972. Didn't get any voicemails this week, Dave. We need some recruiting voicemails over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to start threatening people that we're just going to stop this podcast again. I think that's just going to be the running threat every week. That we're going to stop the podcast if you don't leave a voicemail.
We need recruiting question voicemails. And there should be a lot of topics to talk about recruiting-wise because, as we said, Greg Biggins joined us. What's up, Greg? How you doing?
Dude, I'm doing good, fellas. So, Woody, just now, I don't know if you know the name Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, but your threat of I'm just going to stop the podcast just reminds me so much of Hacksaw back in the day when he went getting the phone calls. I'm just going to stop doing this right now. That was a horrible horrible impersonation, but yeah.
I thought that was great.
Little Hacksaw to you with that comment. I loved it.
That's funny. Hacksaw, man. Is he still working anywhere? Does he work anywhere now?
I do not know.
Yeah.
I do not know.
That was back in the 690 days when we would get that in LA and, listen to more. Yeah, man. That was some funny stuff.
Before my time, gentlemen.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, we're older than Dave, than the young pup, David Woods.
Yeah. We're done with the dead period, which is why we're getting into recruiting now. Otherwise, we would just talk about football all day. Greg, so when you're talking to like coaches and they've put in this extended dead period now that's like almost a month long, is this a good thing for them or do they hate it? Like, what's the general consensus on it?
I think they see the pluses and the minuses. Obviously, I think they would love to have one, just give them one more week, either at the end of December or beginning of January. I think they just kind of feel with only having three recruiting weekends, where you can trip guys in January is a little bit tight, especially when you only get two in December. And if you're a player that's on a CIF championship team or, countrywide, a team that's going deep in the playoffs, you're not going to really get that first weekend of December. So, a lot of these elite kids only get maybe two or three trip weekends. So I think the coaches love the fact that they have some time off, that they can kind of be with their families, that they can, do the coaches convention. But I do think they want just one extra weekend to have official visits and have kids coming in on campus and being able to go visit kids as well.
I mean, one of the big issues is really the playoffs, right? Because now, it would be a disadvantage for Alabama or Clemson if other people are out recruiting and they could not. So you kind of have to wait till after the championship game to let everyone recruit to keep it all on an even keel, I guess.
Exactly. That's a huge part of it. So, and obviously Alabama, you got to feel bad for those guys. It's really, really tough to recruit at Alabama and it's not a level playing field. So you got to make sure that the Ohio States and the Florida States and the Bamas, it's got to be level for everybody.
Yeah. Alabama might only get 8, 9, 5 stars this year. You don't want to handcuff them.
You do not want to handcuff those guys. You got to give Nick Saban a fair shot to get his usual class of 18, 19. Even though stars don't matter, I keep hearing that on a daily basis. Stars do not mean a thing. Somehow Bama seems to be pretty successful at winning some championships with a lot of 4 and 5 star kids.
Yeah, I think you'd probably want a team stacked with more 4 and 5 stars than you would rather have that not. I mean, I think that's probably the way you'd want to go.
Well, you know, the walk-on receiver from Clemson had a couple of touchdowns. Therefore, stars do not matter because it's the exception that we should go by, not the rule. That's what I'm being told, and that's what I agree with. So Clemson walk-on receiver means stars don't matter. Everyone should just have a whole class full of walk-ons, and they'll win national titles, baby.
Do people realize when they say that to you or to Brandon or to anybody that they're basically just saying, hey, you're terrible at your job? I don't think they really get that that's what they're trying to say when they say that, that they're actually insulting the work you do.
I feel like they do know that by saying stars don't mean a thing, you're kind of saying, hey, your guys, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. And the baffling thing is, yet they will say, man, but what these college coaches do is that's gospel truth. Yet, how, if this kid was so talented that he's having a walk on it, it's not like he had 50 offers and decided to walk on somewhere else. So, yeah, maybe we missed on this kid. And we kind of, me and Huff gave, you know, our boy Chad Simmons some grief because he had him as a 2-star. But where are all the colleges, you know, that who didn't offer this kid? Obviously, are their evaluation skills called into question? I don't think so. So it's, can you do, Woody? You know, what can you do? You just grin and laugh at it, and then you make fun of them on the podcast with you guys.
Well, I kind of feel bad when we're talking about 4 and 5-star players and we're going to transition into – talking about Pac-12 teams, we decided to go from the bottom to the top, and not a whole lot of 4 and 5-star players at the bottom of the Pac-12 rankings. But, Greg, would you like to go through each and every team in the Pac-12 and talk about their recruiting class?
Let's do it. Let's do it. And just to back up on a serious note, because we're all just kind of being facetious and joking around. You know, you can win big with 3-star players. You know, 4 and 5 stars, those are guys you're projecting to, you know, being NFL first round picks and, you know, future Sunday kids. But at the college level, you can give me a class full of 3-stars and they may outperform some of these 4 and even 5-star guys at the college level. We just feel upside wise, you know, that 5-star guy, the guy you look at and you say, yes, that's an NFL guy. But college wise, I think you see it all the time where you can be a great college player and may not transition to the NFL, but how many Heisman Trophy winners or even, you know, your Scooby Wrights of the world who may not be that first, second round NFL guy, but just great college players. So, I don't mean to pick on those guys that are 3-stars because those guys are going to be very good college players.
All right. So we're going to start with, I think, Colorado. So we're going to go through all these, start at the bottom, work our way up. Colorado's currently ranked, I think, 72nd and a tie for 72nd in the, scout team rankings for recruiting. They have 11 commitments, 9 3-stars, 2 2-stars, I believe. When you're looking at kind of the strategy for Colorado, and I guess this kind of translates onto the field too, how do you think they should be recruiting? Like, what kinds of guys do you think they should be targeting to get out of this rut they've been in for now? I mean, going on a decade. I mean, what's the recruiting strategy when you're at a school that's, you know, lost as many games as they have the last few years?
Hey, Greg, wait, before you say anything, we have a little sound effect for you.
Colorado Buffaloes.
That was awesome. So, first off, have either of you guys ever been to Colorado before? Ever been to Boulder, Colorado?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Unreal, right? It's probably one of my 2 or 3 favorite campuses I've been to. Stanford is up there, and Colorado is just unbelievable. And if you watch the 30 for 30 with Bill McCartney, you saw kind of what he did was, you know, a lot of the California guys, you're going to go to SC and UCLA. That's going to be your first choice. So if you're Colorado, why can't you go and recruit a kid and beat out a Washington or an Oregon or a Cal or an Arizona? Obviously, Stanford is on another level too. I'm not going to even include them, but obviously, you know, SC and UCLA, and we'll throw in Stanford, are always going to have first choice. And right now, Washington's on the upswing. Oregon is an elite program. But if you're Colorado and you can get these kids on campus, there's no reason why you can't compete for those same players by going to Washington or going to Arizona or ASU. Your campus is great. You're building up your facilities. You have a pretty good college coaching staff right now. So it's just, and they're so close. When you watch the games, they're not that far away from winning a couple of these games. So for me, I'm going to target maybe not those five-star guys that are going to go either to the local school or they're going to go to Notre Dame or a Texas or a Florida State, but just those really solid college prospects. Again, use the term, those solid three-star guys. I'm going to try to recruit the heck out of my own state, which is an issue for them. A lot of times those top elite players in state, your Christian McCaffreys, they all want to go and they want to leave home, almost like Hawaii. It's very tough to keep those top in-state guys home. So you need to try to kind of, I hate to use the term build defense, but you want to keep those top guys in state and then recruit nationally. You're able to go into, you know, surrounding states, Colorado, former Big 12 school. So they have ties to Texas. They have ties to Oklahoma and Nebraska. They've always recruited California well back in the day when Neuheisel was there and obviously Bill McCartney, even Gary Barnett. So there's a lot of places they can go and recruit from. I honestly think they should be doing and can be doing a little bit better. So for me, I loved watching them back in the Darren Hagan, Eric Bieniemy days. I would love to see them kind of rise up and be, you know, a top team in the Pac-12.
What's their class looking like right now? Like, Dave said, ranked, tied for 72nd, only 11 commits. So, I mean, obviously getting more commits, you kind of move up the rankings a little bit. What's the class looking like right now?
Yeah. So we'll pick out a couple guys. I mean, start off with, you know, we always want to start off with the quarterback. Sam Neuer is a kid who, you know, a good friend of the program, good friend of ours, Taylor Barton in Oregon, has worked with this kid for a while and he really, really raves about him. He thinks he's a legit Pac-12 quarterback, pretty good sized kid, about 6'3", 200 pounds. I know Huff likes him a little bit too. So that's a nice building block. You always want to have your quarterback. And then a couple of the guys that I've had a chance to see, Akil Jones, Valley Christian, outside linebacker, 6'1", 210 pound, pretty athletic kid. Ronnie Blackman is from Westlake, Georgia, a cornerback, 5'10", about 174. And Blackman's a kid that, again, talked to Chad Simmons about him. He turned down, you know, a few other offers from schools that were pretty credible. This guy can play a little bit. You know, anytime you get a player from Georgia, you know, for me, Georgia's right up there. Maybe not with Florida, California, and Texas, but maybe the number four state as far as producing elite talent. So, a couple guys from South Plantation, Florida, Johnny Huntley, Anthony Jewel Miss, both those guys, talented. The Jewel Miss kid is a guy we saw at one of the opening regionals and, 6 feet, 185 pounds. I like him a little bit. And then Trey Udofe is a kid from Northern California, a wide receiver, more of a possession guy, runs just okay, but about 6'1 and 170. And, you know, I think he's a guy that can contribute to them too. So, some pretty solid players. Obviously, you want to see them round out their class a little bit more. But so far, of those guys, not a bad group right now.
Should we move on to Arizona?
Yeah, we should go to
Arizona Wildcats.
All right, now we've got some tightly packed Pac-12 schools. 48, 47, 46, and 45 are all Pac-12 schools. Arizona comes in at 48th. 15 commitments. I think we're looking at 3 4 stars, 11 3 stars, currently ranked 48th of the 15. With Arizona, I mean, have you noticed any kind of, I don't know, was there any disappointment that Pac-12 South championship they got last year hasn't, you know, kind of given them that boost that maybe they would have expected?
You know, honestly, when I look at their class, I think it's really, really solid. I'm actually surprised it's this low because I'm looking just going man for man. Every single one of these players in their class is a guy that can actually play. So I think they did get a little bit of a boost. And again, if you're Arizona, kind of like Colorado, you're not going to ever really get, you know, that elite five-star kid unless it's maybe an in-state homegrown kid. You know, you're going to be competing mostly for guys that aren't going to choose SC and UCLA, and they've done well with that. It's a good staff as far as evaluating talent, and they develop it pretty well too. So, I wouldn't say they didn't get much of a benefit. I would maybe like to see them do a little bit more in-state. I feel like Arizona State has maybe had a little more success with the in-state kids, especially this year. But overall, again, man for man, this is a very solid class for Arizona.
All right. Any more on Arizona? Do we want to move on to the next?
Yeah, I got a couple things about Arizona.
Okay.
Let's talk about a few of the guys. I mean, Khalil Tate is a guy we've all seen a ton, right? I mean, he's a Scout 300 kid. You can make an argument that he was the most dynamic football player in California this past year. Guy is a true dual threat quarterback. I think he's a little bit more comfortable, looks more natural running the football than just being a pocket passer. He's got a cannon for an arm, but with Khalil, it's all, you know, it's going to all come down to, you know, how quickly can the guy, you know, learn the offense and understand, you know, reading a college defense, going through progressions. Right now, he's more of just a one read guy. That first read's open he can hit it to him. If not, he's going to take off and run. And when he takes off and run, he looks like a running back. You know, he's built like a running back. He runs like a receiver. So, we have him rated as an athlete. I think he's going to be given first chance as a quarterback. And out of all the systems that he could fit in, Rich Rodriguez is the perfect prototype system for him. So if anyone can make him a college quarterback, it's obviously Rich Rod. But just again, going down their list, Kaihi Neves is a guy who we liked a lot as a quarterback, made it to the Elite 11 semifinals. They took him as a linebacker. He was an early Utah commit, but the kid's 6'4 and 230. And even though he can really spin the football, linebacker is where he's going to be coming in. And Michael Elatise is our number one offensive guard in the whole entire West region. The guy had offers from just about every single school. This guy, they did beat out, you know, some of the major schools, UCLA, Washington, a lot of schools in the SEC. Michael Elatise might be, you know, the real headliner of that class. London Iacopo, another four-star kid. I saw him a ton at Modern Day High School. Now he's at Long Beach City. Instincts off the charts, extremely tough, physical, violent football player. A guy I thought, honestly, I think he can play for either LA school. Neither decided to go on him. He's going to go to Arizona. I would be shocked if he's not on the field as early as next year. JJ Taylor, again, he's a perfect example of what I'm talking about earlier when I say stars, three-star guys. This is a guy who three-star because he's only about 5'7". On a good day, maybe in cleats, 5'7", 160 pounds, but he can absolutely go. Superior quickness. For as small as he runs extremely tough. He breaks two or three tackles every time. Doesn't have the same top-end speed as Sean McGrew, but has just as good, not a better burst than he can. More wiggle probably than McGrew. And he's a great high school football player. I think he's going to be a very good college player. Jacob Colacion, Isaiah Hayes, two more guys that we saw a ton over the summer playing 7-on-7. Both these two guys, Colacion is a tough physical linebacker. Isaiah Hayes played for Keyshawn Johnson's Team 19, early Boise State commitment, backed off. He's going to Arizona now. Again, I think both those two guys have the talent and the toughness to play for either LA school. So overall, top to bottom, really, really strong class.
Yeah, only 15 commits right now, so that's probably why they're ranked where they are with a lot of people in front of them with more.
Yep. Right. They're probably star, you know, what at the rate, if you want to do it by average star per player, it's probably, I would guess, maybe top five or top six.
All right.
Then Oregon State comes in at 47th with 24 commitments. So kind of a stark difference from Arizona, 9 more commitments, 2 of them 4 stars, 12 of them 3 stars. The interesting part for me here is, the Kawani Sitake thing leaving for BYU. And I know he was a big part of their recruiting. How do you think that affects things for them? Who's going to replace him as kind of their main recruiter with this, especially with this cycle?
Well, 1 second, Greg. Sorry.
Yeah, where's my sound effects? Like a lawnmower.
That's a good one.
That was outstanding.
So go ahead, Greg.
Yeah. Honestly, they have yet to find, they need to find a someone. You know, Sitake was outstanding as both a coach and also a recruiter, especially in the Polynesian community. Going to BYU, I've already seen a couple of guys that both schools are kind of looking at now are going to swing over to BYU. So, you know, really need to develop that guy. You know, the receiver coach, Brett Brennan, is a tremendous, tremendous coach and recruiter. But he's always been more of a, you know, more of a regional guy and recruits receivers. But they kind of need to bring in a national type guy who can be that, you know, that closer who they want to put on every top kid and try to go about it that way. A lot of schools, you do it by area. And then once you kind of get into who you like, then you have it positional. You know, your receiver coach will recruit receivers, O-line coach recruits O-linemen, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of schools will also assign at least one coach on staff who's like your top-notch salesman to go and kind of just try to sweep the nation. So it'd be good. You know, look at the class. Again, I see some talent. You know, Isaac Garcia is a kid from Bellevue High School, early USC commit, tight end, defensive end, really good senior tape. At one point we had him as a 4-star, dropped him a little bit. I think there were some durability questions. He was, you know, kind of hurt a lot the past couple of years, but in terms of being a football player, I do like him a lot. I like his frame. I like his toughness. I think he can definitely help a team. Andres Hughes Murray is one of Huffman's favorite guys this past year in Washington. He's a true inside backer, 6'3", 240. He's that enforcer, run stuffer, just smack you in the face and beat the crap out of you type of football player. I think that's why Huff liked him so much. But Sherrod Thompson, another guy who originally had offers from both LA schools, Oklahoma. I mean, everybody liked this guy. There's some stuff off the field, I think, that kind of hurt his stock a little bit. But, you know, I spent some time with him this a couple weeks ago at the Semper Fi Bowl. I really like the kid. I think he's made some not great choices, but I do think he's a good kid, and I hope it works out for him. But he's a big physical safety. We have him at 6'1", 185. He looks to me closer to 6'2", and 205 pounds. I mean, he's a huge safety, but he actually could run pretty well. Tyson Penn, hyper-athletic kid, Bellevue High School, 6'4", 200 pounds. I think he jumped almost like 40 inches at one of the Nike opening regionals. So, again, going down the list, you know, maybe not a super sexy list of guys, but they do have some guys that can play.
All right, let's move on to
Washington State Cougars.
All right, so 26. Yeah, it was a cat meowing.
That was more of a cat than a coug.
Yeah, definitely cat meowing. Washington State coming in at 46, 26 commitments. So they've got to be close to done. 19 three stars, and then I'm assuming 7 two stars are unranked. Are they close to done? Do you know? I mean, at 26 commitments, is that close?
You would think so, right? They got 13 kids coming in this weekend. So, obviously a lot of those guys are already committed, but at least half of that 13, 6, 7 guys are still on the table. So I don't know how many they can take, but they're recruiting like they can take a class of 30. And you have to assume, you know, there's a handful of JUCO kids in there, which means they can probably early enroll, or maybe they've already early enrolled. So those guys will count on last year's total. So they can bring in a pretty big class. So, start off with the quarterback position. Quentin Davis, really interesting kid. He played behind a guy, that Woody knows pretty well, Josh Rosen. He was pretty good at football the last few years. And so Quentin, they get a chance to play at all. He played some mop up duty, but he had a huge senior year. And actually, if you're a stat scout, he actually put up better numbers than Josh did, led them all the way to a CF championship game where they fell to Centennial. Quentin Davis is a pretty interesting kid. 6'1", 205 pounds. He's smart. He's decisive. I think he fits in that Washington State system really, really well. It gets the ball out quickly. And again, you don't need to have, he's got a pretty live arm, but you don't, in that Washington State system, you know, you want a smart kid above all else. He's got to have a high football IQ, make quick decisions, get the ball quickly on time, and be accurate with it. And that's what Quentin Davis can do. I like Desmond Patton a lot. He's a big receiver, 6'4", 200 pounds. Saw him a lot over the summer playing some 7-on-7. And I think he's a physical talent. Romello Harris, a running back from Tulare Union, probably a top 5, top 6 running back out west. I don't know where we actually have him, but I think he's that good. He's a guy I think can come in and probably see some early time. Marcus Strong, Carter High School, real physical football player, 5'11", 160 pounds, safety, tough, mean. Mason Vineyard, a big tight end, 6'4", 6'5", 220. Helix High School, played mostly as a big receiver, but he's going to transition to tight end. And again, in that Washington system, it's going to be more of like a, you know, someone we're familiar with, like a Thomas Duarte type, who's not going to really have his hand in the ground blocking too much. But he's going to be that tight end that I think can get down the field and make some plays. Isaiah Love missed a ton of his senior year. He was in a car accident going to the Nike opening up in Northern California. Unfortunately, missed a lot of his senior year, but one of the best true cover corners that I saw over in the summer. Grant Porter, guy who played for that Ground Zero 7-on-7 team. Speed. Dad ran track at USC. Grant can absolutely flash. Huge, huge speed. He's a long distance guy. His teammate, Skylar Thomas. 7-on-7 teammate, I should say. Yeah, also a Ground Zero kid. Another player I like who can play. So, you know, nice, pretty solid class. It's big, as you said, numbers wise. If they can get a couple guys that they're tripping in this weekend, Curtis Weaver from St. Anthony's, big time defensive end. He's coming in. Zion Echols, one of the most explosive running back / receiver types in California. He's coming in this weekend. That would really be a nice capper to their recruiting class.
It seems like Washington State always recruits California really well. It seems like, you know, year in and year out, like half their class comes from California. What do you think the biggest key for them recruiting California so well is?
You know, that they prioritize it. They have a staff that is very, very good relationally. So they have a ton of great contacts in California, and they've had success in the past with California players, just, you know, getting some of those guys, that honestly neither SC or UCLA wanted. They go there, a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, and they have success, and that kind of breeds it. So they can go back, you know, to the LA City section, and they can go recruit those guys that, you know, maybe they felt snubbed, and, you know, they're going to give Washington State a look. And I mean, and let's be real. Again, they're not getting guys that are going to turn down SC or UCLA, but again, they're getting guys that could play, you know, probably for just about anybody else outside of maybe an Oregon or a Stanford, and they're doing pretty well with them. So great relationally and then past success with those guys.
All right. Let's move on. Our next team.
Utah Utes.
All right. Yeah. So that was a Ute Indian, I think, firing an arrow. Ute Native American. Let's not get it twisted, guys.
Get some mad emails, not being politically correct.
I know. All right. So Utah coming in at 45th with 22 commitments. I think they have 1 5-star. I'm guessing that's a JUCO kid. And then 16 3-stars. Coming in at, with 22 commitments. I kind of want to just ask about Troy Williams here. Cause I was kind of intrigued that he never really panned out at Washington, then went JUCO. Now he's going to Utah. What's the kind of read on him right now? I mean, where is his development? Do you see him kind of making an impact at Utah?
I sure hope so. I've been a fan, and obviously, you know, when you've been in this business for as long as I have, you almost kind of stop rooting for teams. You root for the players you rated high so you look good after the fact. So Troy was a guy that we really hyped up a lot coming out of high school. He got to Washington, you know, depending on who you talk to, you know, he either just wasn't the leader that they wanted him to be and wasn't working as hard, not picking up the offense. Or he was never given a fair shot. You know, the only game he ever started was the game where I think it was like basically he played in a hurricane where it was so windy that you saw little kids in the stands being flown across to the other stands. It was that bad. So, you know, he went to Santa Monica. His old high school offensive coordinator was the OC at Santa Monica. I talked to him a handful of times. He said, Troy is on a different level. He said he is unbelievable physically. He's always had everything you want, the arm, the accuracy, he can scan, he can see the field, he can run when he needs to. You know, leadership is always the one question mark. He had a tendency when I saw him to get down, put his head down, makes a mistake. You know, you want to see him pick up his teammates a little bit as a quarterback. You know, that guy's got to be your leader. So leadership was the one thing that I think he needed to work on. But in terms of physical talent, he's going to be given every opportunity. He's already enrolled in school to be the guy for Utah next year. And I mean, throwing wise, I mean, he already throws it better than Travis Wilson. It just, you know, does he have the same toughness? Is he the same leader that Travis was? So I really hope so. I think he can turn it around, but,
Craig, I got to see him quite a bit at Narbonne just cause, you know, close to where I was. But I remember as a true freshman, the people were talking about him. And I think Sark was at Washington at the time. And I think he was going to offer him when he was a true, I mean, and he wasn't even starting that. I forget who was starting for Narbonne.
Never redshirted at Narbonne, huh? He just true freshman. He was,
yeah. Right? There was no, I mean, it was the hype about him. I mean, you want to root for the kid, and it's interesting to see that you hope he's got everything together and is able to succeed at Utah. But I just remember watching him for years.
Yeah.
And finally get to see him in college will be fun.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to Marcus Tuesesopo, who's, you know, USC now at UCLA. When he was at Washington with Troy, and I go, hey, how's Troy doing? He said, you know what? Physically, he's better than everyone we have here. It's just that other stuff, and that other stuff is actually the most important stuff, right? I mean, we've all been doing this long enough. It's great to have that big arm, but to be a successful college NFL quarterback, it's those intangibles. It's that toughness, leadership, and football IQ and smarts that counters everything. So, Troy's a smart kid. I just want to see, you know, the leadership and the toughness. So, but, no, I mean, getting back, you know, I know Woody mentioned they have a 5-star. They don't just have a 5-star JUCO. They have the number one JUCO recruit in the nation, Garrett Bowles, offensive tackle. And I was told by a couple of different people that this guy was so talented that he might have gotten drafted this year out of JUCO if he was eligible. He's that good.
Wow.
6'6", 305 pound, a true left tackle. Those guys are always, you know, your bread and butter. That's where you want to build your offensive line around is that left tackle. This guy, I mean, again, he could have went to any school he wanted to. Obviously, there's some family connection with Utah. So a huge pickup for the Utes. And obviously, you can pencil him in to be their starting tackle next year. going down that list again, another guy that kind of jumps out, kind of a funny kid, Devere Hamilton. I don't think anyone probably talks or has more fun on Twitter than Devere. And I always joke, man, you better be good for as much talking as you do on Twitter. He's, you know, two-way guy, receiver, outside linebacker. He's going to probably start off outside linebacker, but he is a big kid, 6'3", 200 pounds, pretty athletic kid. So Samisi Lewaki, a defensive end, 6'4", 240. USC has offered him, so watch out for that one. I know, you know, he's an LDS kid. So, you know, Utah, there's it's not BYU, but it still, you know, makes the family feel comfortable. But USC is going to be tough. And, you know, if they can keep him, that'll be big. They always seem to recruit San Clemente High School pretty well. They got a couple guys. Tucker Scott was an all-CIF offensive lineman. He plays tackle, but he'll be a guard at the college level. And also Cole Fotheringham, a tight end from San Clemente, 6'4", 215, really a tough kid. Not a hyper-athletic kid, but a tough kid. And again, he just, you think of Utah, for me, I always think of toughness. And that's what this kid has. He's a tough kid. And they have a whole class full of guys, I think, that are just tough. You call them football players. You know, overall, you know, real solid so far.
All right. I guess we should move on, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Little jump. We had a group of four teams ranked all next to each other from 45 to 48. Up at number 37.
Washington Huskies.
The Dogs coming in at 37 with 13 commitments. So there's still a lot of room to grow in this class. 6'4" stars, 7'3" stars, one top 100 guy. How much room is there to grow in this class, Greg? Do you know off the top of your head how many more commitments they're looking to take?
They got some big dogs still on their board. They're going after some major guys. David Long is down to Michigan and Washington. He is going to be announcing probably next week. I know he's going on a nice 2-week trip to Italy. So, right now that's a coin toss for me, but David Long, I mean, that's a top 100 kid. Jonathan Kongbo, he got an offer from Bama just last week, but before that offer, and this is another five-star, top five JUCO player nationally, SC UCLA have both offered him. Before the Bama offer came in, I was here in Washington, may actually be his leader. So again, Bama's coming in. We're going to talk about Bama. They're pretty good. they're going to be tough to hold off, but Washington is trying really, really hard on him. They got to hold on to some guys, you know, Kentrell Love. You know, he's going to visit UCLA. They got to, you know, really try hard to hold on to him. But if they can do that, again, I'm looking at their class and you see guys like Luke Wattenberg, an elite tackle, Brennan Wellington, just a pure football player, Camilo Eifler, really athletic, physical linebacker. I mentioned Kentrell Love. I love the way that guy plays, the most physical corner in all of the West Coast. Isaiah Gilchrist, you know, maybe the top covered corner in the Northwest. It's a really, really good class. And I think I actually did their average star rating per player, and it was like top three or four in the Pac-12. So it's a small class. I can't forget Sean McGrew, one of my all-time favorite running backs. Saw him as a sophomore, and I thought, oh, you know, nice little kid, you know, a little white running back, you know, 5'6" kid. And then you saw him again. I'm like, you know, this guy actually is not bad. You watched him again. You're like, dude, this guy can play. By the end of the year, on a team when he was a sophomore that had four guys: Shea Fields, Damian Mama, Josh Rosen, Jilawa Dude, that all start. In the Pac-12, Sean McGrew was the best player on that team as a sophomore. In the Centennial game and in the De La Salle game, Sean McGrew was the best player on the field as a sophomore. So this guy is talented. He's smallish, but he can absolutely play. And again, another guy I like and root for. So overall, you know, really, really good looking class.
If 5'6" is smallish, what's small?
I was trying to be nice.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, another Bosco kid. So he should be. I love watching those little scat back kind of guy. Well, he's not a scat back, but the guy, the little small running backs, when you see him in high school and they do crazy things, I always root for him to do well in college. You don't always see it. It doesn't always pan out, but I think McGrew is one of those dudes that can.
Yeah, I do too. Again, and Coach Pete's system is really good for him. You know, they'll get him in space. And I mean, he's not a, you know, guy you're going to give the ball to, you know, put in the eye formation, give him the ball 30 times a game. He's not that guy. Student body right, left, but give him the ball maybe 10 times a game, spread him out, put him in the slot. He's got great hands in the backfield. Give him a couple carries. He's going to make one or two dynamic plays every – I mean, this guy's a legit – he's small, but he's a legit 10-5, 100-meter guy. So that means on basically in every game he's going to be one of the two or three fastest players on the field. So you get him in space, he's going to get to the house tons of times for Washington. I'm excited to see him play too.
Do you think like similar to like a Dominic Davis?
I think so. I think he's probably more of a natural running back though. You know, you watch him play and running back, a lot of it is just feel and instinct. It's not just about being big and fast. And he is so instinctual, balance and vision. I mean, you can literally see he's so patient when he runs. He doesn't just get the ball and go 1,000 miles an hour. You know, he's very patient. And then all of a sudden he'll see a hole, a little crack, and boom, he's gone. And I think he actually is a little more physical than Davis, even though he's similar size. I mean, he's running, always falling forward. I think Davis is that guy who can transition to be a more of an every down slot receiver if you wanted to use him that way. Although I like him out of the backfield too. I think Davis may be kind of more of that every down receiver, whereas I think McGrew actually can play running back, put him in the slot as well, but I think he can actually be more of that every down running back, not a 30 carry a game running back, but, you know, a third down back and give him the ball 10 times a game.
All right. I guess we should move on.
Let's do it.
Next, we have a little feedback there. Next, program.
California Golden Bears.
See? Just the standard bear roar. Nothing to be, nothing to laugh about. The sturdy Golden Bears come in at 33 in the rankings. 24 commitments, 1 four-star, 18 three stars. Cal, it doesn't seem like they've taken too much of a hit with all the kind of Sonny Dykes rumors that were going around a few weeks ago. They built a pretty good class. I mean, what's your overall assessment of this class right now?
Yeah, very solid. I mean,
we got you, Greg. We might have some microphone issues with Greg. Dave, you're still
here. Yeah, I'm still here. I'm with you.
Hey, Greg, I think we got a microphone problem. Hello?
I'm still here. I'm still talking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there was something going on with your microphone, I think.
Dang it. I just said some poetic stuff that I'll never be able to repeat again. No, so it's a solid class. Again, I always say, I think it's a solid top 40, top 35 class. They deserve to be where they're ranked. And, you know, again, start off with the quarterback position. Max Gilliam is a guy who had a huge senior year, really big, big senior year, put up the numbers. He's a dual threat kid. And he should be given every chance to actually compete for playing time. Spring enrollee, 6'2", 185-pound kid who's very athletic, improved a ton, made some big strides just in terms of, you know, being a pure pocket passer and being more decisive in his reads and recognition. So I'm anxious to see what he can do. Travion Beck, kind of keep the Bosco theme going. He was one of the better cover corners. Again, people kind of thought maybe a little undersized. Generously listed at 5'10". He's probably closer to 5'9", but man, he is scrappy as heck. You know, he will compete. He is a guy that will just gnaw and bite your leg off all day long. I mean, he loves to just to compete. I mean, he loves that challenge of people thinking that he can't cover you. Melqui Stovall was an early USC commit, had offers from schools like Notre Dame and Oklahoma, and he took all of his trips. We thought he was going to Utah, but Cal was that last visit. He loved it there. He loved the offense that Coach Dykes is going to run. He wanted to be more of a receiver than a running back, and that's why he chose Cal. He just felt the offense kind of fit him a little bit better. Say what you want about Utah, but offensively, you know, not the most dynamic place. Cameron Bynum from Centennial High School, always a great place to get kids, Centennial. Bynum was very, very solid. He played opposite Kentrell Love and had a, you know, 2-year starter for a team that won back-to-back CF championships. Drew Kobayashi was one of the top receivers for Hawaii, played with at St. Louis High School with Tua Tagovailoa. So Kobayashi, one of the fastest receivers out west, a legit 4-5 guy. So again, I like Cal's class. Francisco Perez, can't forget about Paco. He is going to be visiting UCLA this weekend, 6'4", 300-pounder. May have been my favorite guy at the Nike opening at Redondo. Mean kid, nasty, but he plays under control. But again, I like those guys that are college guards that play high school tackle. It's a lot easier to go from outside to in than the other direction. I think if you're a high school tackle, it shows that you have some balance, some feet, some athleticism, and then you move them inside and you can play guard. It means you're going to have a guard who's pretty athletic. So I like Paco Perez quite a bit.
Can we move on, Dave? You got any follow-ups?
I'm good.
Okay. We got the top 25. Let's move on to
Arizona State Sun Devils.
All right. The Sun Devils are breaking into the top 25 here. They're number 24 with 18 commitments, 6 4-stars, 12 3-stars. ASU kind of goes, in a lot of ways, I think, generally speaking, they go the way of Utah a little bit with how many JC guys they get. But this year, it actually looks like they're going more for high school, at least from what I'm seeing. I mean, what's your general assessment of how ASU recruits and their strategy for targeting kind of JC guys?
You know, this year, it's kind of interesting. It's not as heavy of a JUCO class, but they still signed 6 kids that are all already enrolled, and all 6 are in the JUCO Scout 100. So it wasn't as big in terms of the numbers, but in terms of just the high impact, I still think it was very, very good, in terms of how they did it. High school wise, though, N'Keal Harry was just about everybody's choice for the top receiver at the UA All-American game practices, which is, you know, more important than the game itself. The practices are where you kind of really see what you can do. Big 6'3", 210-pound kid, body control, high points the ball, runs better than given credit for. He will play next year, true freshman. Chase Lucas, his high school teammate, just got bumped back into our Scout 300. Again, everyone said one of the better cover corners all week during the Army practices. We had bumped him out of 300. He got hurt during his senior year, so we just didn't see a lot of him. But he's back in there now at 292. Another guy, I think, that can go and play and be an impact guy down the line, Dylan Sterling Cole. He was an Elite 11 quarterback. I saw him all week during the Separate Five Bowl practices, and he was the top quarterback that I saw. 6'2", 6'3", 185. He can run, but I wouldn't call him a dual threat guy because I think he actually is a very good pocket passer. So a lot of times people, you know, automatically you see a black quarterback and say, oh, he's a dual threat guy. No. This guy is a pure pocket guy. He can make all the throws. He's a smart kid. To me, he fits in their system really, really, really well. So I like him a lot. Top to bottom, you know, really, really nice job of filling all their needs. It's very balanced. Byron Murphy is the top guy on their board. He's going to announce next Thursday. I'm hearing ASU is doing pretty well with him right now. He's going to visit USC this weekend. USC is kind of a childhood favorite. Obviously, they have a great chance, as does Washington. I mentioned earlier, Woody, when he asked about Washington, you know, are they still out there for guys? I mentioned David Long, Congbo, Byron Murphy. I've actually heard it could come down to a Washington-ASU battle. So that's right now they're really close with both those two guys. So, but if ASU can pull in Byron Murphy, they'll have landed the top 3 guys in the state of Arizona for the first time. And I can't remember the last time they'd be able to get the top 3 guys from in-state. So Byron Murphy is a key target for them. As is Lamar Jackson, who's also, for me, I think USC is always going to be tough to beat for a guy who grew up wanting to go there. USC, I don't know if they're recruiting him as hard as other schools. He recently said that the schools on him the hardest are probably ASU, Nebraska. I still feel like USC is USC, and it'll be hard to turn down. But if he does not choose USC, I think ASU's got a great chance to land Lamar Jackson as well. So doing well now, and they can really finish strong.
It seems like ASU, you know, just judging by the last 3 or 4 cycles, they recruit the quarterback position really well. I mean, just it seems like consistently every year they get a 4-star guy. What do you think is the key for them? And just, I mean, for other Pac-12 schools who can't consistently recruit the quarterback position, UCLA.
Who are you referring to? Any schools in mind that have struggled with that?
What do you think the biggest key is for them with being able to pitch these guys who are, you know, Dylan Sterling Cole's a big-time guy. Yeah. Pitch these guys every year on, you know, you can come in and, I don't know, get playing time or whatever it is.
I mean, Mike, you got to give Mike Norvell all the credit in the world. One of my favorite O coordinators, one of my favorite quarterback coaches. I mean, he is legit. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's a very smart guy, a very good quarterback coach. I think his reputation precedes him. And that ASU offense, you know, you watch it. It's very passer friendly. It's kind of a combination of there's some pro style in there. Those kids that kind of think NFL, you have that element of it, but it's also a lot of shotgun. You know, they throw the ball a lot. It's an open offense, so it's a really good offense, and he's a great quarterback coach. So I think Mike Norvell did a nice job evaluating guys. And the biggest thing, and I think you touched upon it on your board, Woody, was just about how they do a great job of keeping guys warm. You know, getting a guy like Manny Wilkins when the whole country – you know, had Kyle Allen as our number one guy. The second Allen dropped him off their list, they already had Wilkins said, hey, don't be offended. You're our number 2 guy. Kyle Allen's number one, but the second that we're out of it, we're offering you. And they recruited him like he was a number one guy, even though he wasn't. The second they offered him, he committed a day later. So when it comes to quarterback recruiting, you gotta keep guys warm. You can't just assume you're gonna get that top guy, even your top two guy. You always have to keep other guys. And it's hard, right? It's hard to let a guy know that you love him without offering him. And you can't offer that guy, because what if you do get your first or second guy? So you have to make sure that guy knows, hey, we like you. We like you enough that, you know, this is our guy, but we're going to move on you. And we want you to know that, understand that. Some guys will get offended, and they don't want to be sloppy seconds for anybody. But, you know, that's what ASU did really well. They made these guys feel like, you know what, they made them feel like they were a priority even when they weren't their number one guy.
All right, that's Arizona State. Let's move on. Next up is
USC Trojans.
All right, USC coming in at number 18, but just 14 commitments, so a lot of room to grow. Three top 100 kids, 3 5-stars, 7 4-stars, 4 3-stars, shaping up to be a very USC class. Greg, have you noticed any significant changes with this recruiting class, or just the guys they're targeting with all the staff changes and, you know, all the assistants leaving, all the new assistants, the whole deal?
You know, I really don't know if I have. I think, you know, that all the early commitments that they picked up, most of those guys, it was, you know, it didn't matter if Sark had stayed, he was always going to flip. I mean, we all kind of knew that. I mean, even when he was committed to USC, he had a date to announce at the Army game. And if you're a committed kid and you set a commitment date, that kind of tells you you're a little bit soft in that commitment. So most of the other guys, though, you know, the Michael Pittmans, they were able to keep. And he just got, what is it, 9:10 at 9 o'clock? So 10 minutes ago, Michael Pittman just got his 5th star. So there you go, Ryan. I don't know if you knew about that one, but another 5-star guy going to USC. They're able to keep all their early guys, the committed guys, Trayvon Sidney, Tyler Vaughns, Frank Martin. Those guys, you know, weren't going to ever go anywhere else. They grew up wanting to go to USC. And I always say it is so easy to recruit to USC. The school recruits itself, even if they have a staff of guys that grind, and they always have. That was the amazing thing about Pete Carroll, was he not only had, you know, the ability, because you're at USC, to get whoever they wanted, but they outworked everybody. I've never seen a more tireless recruiter than Pete Carroll. And they recruited, like I always say this, USC under Pete Carroll recruited like they were like a 4-6 team. They recruited like they were, you know, Oregon State. That's how hard they went after guys. And then so when Pete left, you know, he had Lane and Sark, and they had that same temperament. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, without anyone on staff from the Pete Carroll days now, you know, will they still have that same aggressiveness and work ethic? I think they will. You know, T. Martin, a great recruiter, and, you know, they're going to bring in guys that enjoy it. But again, Wally Bedeku, start off with him. 5-star guy, the top defensive end, maybe not just out west, but maybe in terms of upside, maybe nationally. The guy has just a tremendous burst, tremendous toughness. Little bit, you know, the talk about him maybe playing some outside linebacker, I don't see that at all. If there's one thing he needs to really work on, it's just maybe being a little more fluid in his movement. He's a little bit stiff at times laterally. He doesn't play great in space. So that's why for me, he's 100% edge pass rusher. He can get up the field. You don't want really him moving laterally or dropping back and doing much of that. So a lot of guys on the board still, obviously, Jack Jones, USC, Texas A&M, UCLA, kind of his final three choices. I think Bama's another school that he's mentioning, but, you know, Long Beach probably, I think we all feel that USC has the, you know, is the guy, the team that has the best shot with him, and that'd be another 5-star. So I know people are looking at it and saying, you know, this class, not a typical USC class. Look where they're rated, but, you know, they finish up with Jack and Devin Asiasi, and, you know, other guys that they're looking at, along with the guys they currently have. It's still going to be, you know, a great top 10, top 15 class by the time signing day rolls around.
Yeah, there was actually a lot of talk on the message boards today, Greg, or people like, because they still have two open positions, you know, assistant coaching positions. They have the number one player in the country, Gary, coming in, you know, defensive lineman, and they don't even have a defensive line coach right now. But it's one of those things where it's, you know, they lost 6 games. You fire the coach middle of the season. There's still openings on the staff. And, you know, worst case, they're going to have a top 15 class, most likely. And I didn't even realize that Pittman picked up his 5th star when I pulled up the rankings, but we started the podcast. He only had 4 stars. And then sometime during the podcast, apparently he picked up the fifth one. But it'll be good. I mean, they had the number one class last year. It'll still be a really good class. But with all the turmoil and stuff going on, I don't think USC fans should kind of go crazy that it's not a top five class again this year.
I mean, there's not another school. I mean, I don't want to use too much hyperbole, but I don't know if there's another school maybe in the country that could literally have gone through what they went through with, you know, the firing the coach and you're bringing in, you know, you bring in Helton. He loses the two games right after, you know, the Stanford and the Wisconsin game. You have a staff of guys leaving. Like you mentioned, they just now hired a DB coach, 2 days ago? They don't have a D-line coach. They just hired a DC, you know, a few days ago after not being sure. It gives the impression of just some, again, turmoil is too strong of a word, but just instability, I guess, right? Yet you look at their class and look at where they're ranked. I mean, any other school probably loses half of their guys when they go through all of this. And USC, again, is still going to be a top 10, top 15 class. And then you have the 2017 class that they're already doing pretty well with, even though they lost a couple of guys, Stephen Carr, Thomas Graham. They're still USC guys. You know what I'm saying? They are what they refer to themselves as. We're still committed, but we just want to go through the process. And that means I want to have some fun and take my trips and then go back to USC. That's what that means. In the original Greek, you know, that's how you define what those guys are doing right now. So again, I'm always amazed at how USC finishes up. And I think this year will probably be no different.
All right, let's move on. Top three in the Pac-12, we have
Oregon Ducks.
Oregon coming in at number 17 with 18 commitments, 8 4-stars, 10 3-stars. The biggest thing for Oregon for me over the last few years is just, well, really kind of the results on the field in terms of quarterback recruiting. Just haven't really been able to generate an in-house quarterback now for a couple of seasons. They're taking 2 quarterbacks and then another athlete in Tristan Wallace who can play quarterback. I mean, what are you seeing out of these guys? Do you think they've got a new kind of, I know they've got Travis Waller, now Johnson on, you know, in the program, but do you think they have a future starter in this group?
You know, of the guys, and I got to see Terry Wilson a lot because he was at the Semper Fi Bowl and I was really impressed. I honestly had preconceived ideas of him being just strictly, you know, a running quarterback. And when he got out and tried to throw, either the guy was going to be throwing a bunch of bounce passes or sailing balls or just being laid on passes or just being inaccurate. But he really surprised me. He was right there with Dylan Sterling Cole all week. I think he does have the potential to be a starter. And that, you know what? What you led off with, that is an issue with Oregon right now. You have to bring up the fact that, you know, the fact that they've had to bring in a grad transfer 2 years in a row, it's a little bit of a red flag in terms of not being able to develop the high school kids that they've been bringing in. And you could say, oh, you know, well, you know, they haven't brought in, you know, maybe a guy as good as Marcus Mariota. Well, they obviously identified these guys and felt they were good enough to play for them, or else they wouldn't have ever have offered them in the first place. I still have some hope for Travis Johnson. I know he battled some injuries last year, but I think he does have Pac-12 level talent. Hopefully he can come in and maybe compete this year along with the guy they brought in. The name is escaping me. I think Prukoff, or I think that's a UFC fighter or something. Dakota Prukoff. Yeah. So, but I do think Terry Wilson can be a guy though. I think he's got some talent, and the rest of the class, you know, they have some athletes and they have some really good linemen coming in, you know, Vi Malapiai is the top running back out of Hawaii. He's a scout 300 guy. He played really well in the Army game. And Hunter Campmore, defensive end, 6'4", 6'5", 240, edge pass rusher. Dylan Mitchell, you know, a kid from Tennessee, had national offers from a ton of schools in the South. Brady Breeze, I mean, this kid is what you would call a football player. And best high school player I ever saw. Not the best college prospect, but the best high school player I've ever seen was probably Matt Grudegood. This guy has a lot of those same qualities in just terms of his toughness, his instinct, his feel for the game. He always seems to be 2 or 3 steps ahead of everybody else. You know, I think he's a pretty good athlete. He can come back and he does some things in coverage, but just in terms of just his run support and his ability to come and just knock you out, Brady Breeze is a guy who I think you should really watch for. Troy Dye, another guy with national offers. He's a big, big safety, 6'3", 215. But he's going to probably play like an outside linebacker, like a rover spot that they have at Oregon. It's kind of like a cross between a safety and a linebacker. Bryson Young, you know, he turned down, you know, UCLA to go to Oregon, one of the most athletic pass rushers that you're going to see. So, again, you know, top to bottom, really, really good class, athletic, and like I said, quality lineman on both sides of the ball.
All right.
Cool. Let's move on. Number two.
UCLA Bruins.
All right. UCLA comes in at 16 with 19 commitments, 8 4-stars, 10 3-stars, 2 top 100 guys. There's a recruiting week. Like, I don't even know what to ask because, you know, it's the school I cover. defensive tackle recruiting, I think, is probably one of the more interesting ones going forward with Boss Tagaloa, you know, kicking the tires on Garrett Rand, who's committed to Wisconsin. How do you see that one shaking out at this point, just given what you know?
Yeah, I think they still look good for Boss. I know he's got 3 trips coming up, Washington and then Michigan and then USC on that last weekend. But, no, and Boss is very solid. I think a pretty solid lean with UCLA. That'll be one of the bigger surprises for me if he goes anywhere else. And I mean, they need him. You know, they have a huge dearth of size up front. And so, you know, although I don't think, you know, Boss can maybe come in and have that same impact Kenny Clark does as a true freshman. Saying that, anyone who watched Kenny Clark as a senior wouldn't have thought Kenny Clark would be what Kenny Clark was. I just said Kenny Clark like 3 times in one sentence, but the point
being, said it again.
I just said it again. The point being, I think if you were to watch Clark's senior film with Boss Tagaloa's senior film, it's very similar. I think, you know, Clark probably has a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a taller, bigger body, but Boss is good. You know, he can play. So, and then another, he needs to put on some weight, but Osa Odigizua was one of the guys who the D-line coach during the Semper Fi Bowl practices loved. And I had a chance to talk to him a lot. Really, really good dude. He coaches at Hamilton High School in Arizona. He's been there for 17 years and he's a former wrestling coach. So the way he teaches football or the way he teaches D-linemen, it's all about wrestling moves and just the way it translates so well to your feet, to your violent hands, to getting off blocks using different types of wrestling moves. And he absolutely fell in love with Osa. First day, he said the guy was overwhelmed, just had no idea really what to do. The level of competition was just kind of overwhelming to him. And he's used to being able to just bull rush, you know, these little 200-pound guys he saw in Oregon. By day 2, 3, and 4, it was a different story. You know, he looked like a different football player. And I mean, his get-off was so much quicker because he wasn't having to think so much. You know, and that's, you know, when you're playing D-line, you don't want to be thinking. You want to just be reacting. So Osa's a guy who's got long, old arms. I think he's going to be able to carry 285 pounds, 6'3 frame. He's tough. I think he's kind of a sleeper for UCLA right now. I think he can really develop. And Garrett Rand, you know, ironically, I mentioned Hamilton. That's where Rand plays. I asked about Rand specifically. I asked, you know, how solid is he with Wisconsin? And he said, that he was very solid. He didn't think that he would, flip to anyone. Now that was before Dave Aranda left. So maybe it's a different story now, but at that time, the coach told me he felt that Rand was pretty locked in. So D-line, they need to probably get some more bodies, right? They need to kind of get bigger up front.
Yeah, definitely. And then, I guess this is a good one for you. With all the kind of Mora stuff, basically every offseason with some kind of NFL buzz or whatever, what has been the effect? I'm sure there's some sort of effect, but what has been the effect when you talk to kids or you talk to people around these kids? I mean, how much of it is something that UCLA has to kind of repair bridges when that sort of thing gets out there in the news?
You know, the only guy that I could say it directly impacted was Brandon Burton. I mean, he was set to commit at the UA All-American game when kind of the rumors started flowing out there, and then he decided to hold off on making his announcement. So that was the only one I could say 100% there was, you know, there was an issue right there. So, but I think what you're seeing is not so much kids being, you know, being curious about it, but they're just being negative recruited like crazy by everybody, right? And not just college coaches, but, you know, just your typical high school coach who just has concerns, not a negative recruiter just saying, hey, you know, is Jim going to be there? Like, I've talked to coaches who will ask me, hey, how long do you think Mora's going to stay? So, I mean, the question is out there, and it's not even about, you know, a fellow Pac-12 school saying, don't go to UCLA. Their coach is going to leave next year. It's high school coaches. It's 7-on-7 coaches. It's just trainers, just everybody just wonders and keeps thinking eventually one of these rumors of Mora leaving is going to be true and he's going to take a job somewhere else. So, you know, if you're UCLA, it is something that, you're having to fight. It's a constant murmuring that's out there.
Great.
All right. Go to our number one team in the Pac-12.
Well, talk about Theo Howard, Woody. You don't want to talk about anything. Oh. You just want to talk about D-tackle and Mora. You're going to have some upset UCLA fans right now wondering, hey, we didn't get enough attention as Colorado did.
All right. Throw me some names that you like in UCLA's class.
My voice is gone. This has been the longest podcast I think I've ever been on. But,
and you're the one that wanted to extend it. We're trying to move on.
I'm just saying you're going to get some unhappy emails from, you're going to have some people. No, no, you got to talk about Theo Howard. I mean, let's just talk about him. I think he's a special talent. Very, very close to getting a fifth star as well. The one thing I want to see him do is just be a little bit more consistent pass catcher. You know, he can run. He can run routes. He's got top end speed. He can run after the catch. I mean, he is an athlete. And if he could just become a little more consistent, I mean, the guy has all American potential. He can be as good as anyone UCLA has had in a while. So I think he has that kind of upside. I liked our linebackers also. I'm curious between, you know, Chris Barnes and Lokenny Toaloa. I think at least one of those guys, if not two of those guys, will see the field. And if you're talking about linebackers, you have to mention Mike Juarez, who, you know, will be a signing day decision. He was going to announce for UCLA at the Army Bowl originally, decided to hold off. He's going to trip to Bama now, next week. UCLA will get that last visit on the 30th, and I do think UCLA is doing pretty well with him. That's a five-star guy that UCLA needs to get, and I do think that as of right now, they lead pretty solidly for him.
All right.
Now let's talk Stanford.
Now we're going to talk
Stanford Cardinal.
That's a tree falling down, Greg. So Stanford, obviously that recruiting powerhouse, coming in at number 14 with 19 commitments, 10 4-stars, 8 3-stars, 3 top 100 guys. They're obviously seeing some success from the sustained, you know, last 5 years of pretty much awesome football. Stanford, the limitation is always academics. How have they been able to kind of recruit at this high of a level? Is it just identifying all the right kids and all of them want to come, or have they loosened maybe some of their requirements academic-wise?
You know, that's always the knock that Stanford gets, and it's not justified. And I don't want to name names to embarrass people. I can tell you guys off camera, or this isn't on camera, but whatever. But every year, there are some significant names that they have to turn down. And if you ever hear about players decommitting from Stanford, I'm doing air quotes right now that you can't see. It's not that they decommitted from Stanford, because no one decommits from Stanford. What happens is, this is around the time of the year where you start to see players that are denied admissions. And there are key guys this year and last year. A couple of big names that you would be shocked by who Stanford had to say no to. So I don't buy the whole, oh, they're winning now because they've loosened up the admissions. What they're doing is they are doing a tremendous job of identifying key guys early. And when these guys are just freshmen and sophomores, they're letting them know, okay, so if you want to get into Stanford, here's the plan. Here's what you need to start taking. And they're getting these guys on track to qualify for Stanford as sophomores and juniors. So by the time they're seniors, they're already ready to go. Now, on top of that, they're winning games big time, right? They're finished number 3 in the country, and they've always been mom and dad's first choice. They've always had that advantage. Even when they had stinking Walt Harris and Buddy Tiemens coaching them, they still got guys. They still got guys because mom and dad wants their kid to go to Stanford. I mean, I want my kids to go to Stanford. But now that you're a perennial top 10 team, I mean, they've had how many top 10 finishes? They've won the Pac-12, what, 4 of the last 5 years or 3 of the last 4? Some crazy stat. I mean, they are the premier team out West. And you combine that with the fact that you're getting a Stanford education. Anybody who can get into Stanford, the kind of saying is, if you're smart enough to get into Stanford, you should be smart enough to choose to go to Stanford. And they're getting guys away in the South, away from Alabama and LSU. They're getting guys away from SC and UCLA out West. They're getting guys away from Texas in the Southwest. They're going all over the country, and they're picking and choosing. And it's pretty cool. I actually absolutely love it. I love seeing them do so well. And, you know, Simi Fehoko, start with him because I love the Polynesian players. But he blew everybody away during the Army All-American game. He was, you know, maybe one of the top two or three guys there. He got a nice rankings bump. He's up to 124, but, you know, big, fast. He broke state records for, career yards and touchdowns this past year. You got Clark Yarbrough. They always recruit offensive linemen really, really well, but Yarbrough, Henry Haddis, a couple of top 300, O-tackles that can play guard or even tackle. Curtis Robinson is a guy who turned down both LA schools to go to Stanford. Love him as a linebacker. Super athletic, super smart. Caden Smith, maybe the number two, number three tight end in the country. Nobody uses the tight end better than Stanford does. Maybe them and Notre Dame, but Stanford, every year they're getting guys into the NFL at tight end. Caden Smith is a guy who just looks like an NFL guy. Mike Williams, big time D tackle out of Texas, ranked in the top 300, had all the offers from all the Texas schools. He's going to Stanford. So, I mean, they're getting guys that are legit and, you know, they're getting them from all over. So I love what Stanford's doing.
Overall, Greg, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk any more about Stanford, but I just wanted to, as far as the conference goes, the SEC is ranked number one as far as, rankings, recruiting rankings, Big Ten 2 and Pac-12 3. Do you kind of see that the way it's going to end up for the Pac-12, the third best conference as far as recruiting goes?
Yeah, I think so. Cause I mean, you expect USC and UCLA to make a nice bump and, you know, guys like Jack Jones and Miki Juarez and Asiasi and Tagaloa, all those guys are going to commit to, I think, Pac-12 schools. I think you're going to see Michigan, Ohio State also finish up pretty well too. So it's going to balance out and, You know, schools at the bottom of the list, you know, your Colorados and your Oregon States are kind of bring the overall ranking down a little bit. So I think Pac-12 is very, very good. I mean, shoot, nothing wrong with being top three, but I don't think they're going to be able to catch the SEC for sure. And probably not the Big Ten either.
All right. Well, I'm tapped out. This was long.
You're tapped out.
Yeah. You talked a lot, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I had to.
Good stuff though, Greg. We really appreciate you coming on our little podcast of champions show. You know, I mean, being a West Coast recruiting expert, we thought you were the obvious choice to come on and talk about all the Pac-12 teams.
I appreciate it, fellas. Anytime, anything for you guys.
All right. Well, that's Greg Biggins. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Biggins. Does a great job covering, the West Coast and the nation as for scout.com. And for David Woods, this is Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast of champions.